Local News, Culture, and NPR.
From Radio Catskills Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Well, coming up, we're going to learn all about Community Health Day. It's a family event happening in De Hoyas Park in Monticello this Saturday. Patricio Rubio talks to Deputy Public Health Director for Sullivan County, Jill Hubert Simon, coming up in the second half of the program. And we continue our look at how actions in Washington, D.C., President Donald Trump's domestic agenda, may impact issues, services, and residents in our listening area. Tonight, looking at renewable energy in Pennsylvania and how what was once the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, now the Reconciliation Law of the Land, may delay the development of renewable energy sources while also driving up electric bills in Pennsylvania. I talk to Spotlight PA for that story coming up in just a few minutes. To get it started tonight, though, we do have a reminder of the impact of road work on local travel. Because the bridge over the Delaware River that connects Calicoon, New York, with the Damascus Township in Pennsylvania will be closed to all traffic for 2 days this week to accommodate a concrete pour. New York State DOT says the bridge will close for about 48 hours starting 5 a.m. on Wednesday. And since pouring concrete is dependent both on availability of resources and the weather cooperating, inclement weather may change this closure. It is now scheduled for Wednesday. The rain date for starting work would be Thursday if needed. In any event, during the closure, flaggers will be at either end of the bridge to allow emergency vehicles to pass through if necessary, and pedestrians and bicyclists will also have access to the bridge during this closure. If you want to know more, all the details are up now at WJFFradio.org. And now we have news about New York State electoral politics that involves two New Yorkers representing the state in Congress right now. First up, House Speaker Hakeem Jeffries, who says he's still deciding whether to endorse Zohran Mamdani. WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind reports.
Jeffries says he still wonders if the mayoral frontrunner can deliver for working-class voters in his district. Jeffries spoke last week on CNBC.
During the general election, of course, he's going to have to demonstrate to a broader electorate, including in many of the neighborhoods that I represent in Brooklyn, that his ideas can actually be put into reality.
Top Democrats like Jeffries and Governor Hochul still haven't endorsed Mamdani. Their deliberations show how his primary victory increased tensions between the party's moderates and progressives. Jeffries says he is setting up another meeting with Mamdani in central Brooklyn. Mamdani says he's continuing to talk with everybody. In Albany, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
That's the New York City mayoral race this November. What about next November's gubernatorial race? Representative Richie Torres of the Bronx has been considering a run for governor next year. Back in February, he called Governor Hochul an accidental governor and accused her of gaslighting New Yorkers on crime. Torres was sending a very different message earlier today in the Bronx, where he stood shoulder to shoulder with Hochul as they exchanged niceties and criticized federal funding cuts.
You are so blessed to have represent you in the powerful halls of Washington in Congress. Your Congressman, Richie Torres. Let's give him another round of applause.
Torres told reporters he underestimated the governor. He decided against a gubernatorial run after Zohran Mamdani won the Democratic primary for New York City mayor in June. And thank you to the New York Public News Network for those reports. Well, do you remember the One Big Beautiful Bill Act? Sure you do. The reconciliation bill that eventually lost that name, but it passed the Senate and the House, and President Trump signed it into law on July 4th. It contained a lot of the Trump administration's domestic agenda, and we've been tracking its impact locally. In addition to cuts to health care for low-income folks and food assistance and farm-to-table programs, there are also serious rollbacks to tax credits for clean energy and energy efficiency. Spotlight PA reports that this may impact Pennsylvanians' power bills, bringing households higher electric costs by the end of the decade, and placing new hurdles in front of clean energy projects across the state. to help us understand what's at stake and what it means for consumers and the environment, I spoke with Kate Huang Poo of Spotlight PA earlier this afternoon.
We decided to look into the tax credits because the investment and production tax credits, because they're two of the bigger tax credits as a part of the IRA. So there's a lot of money there. And also, Pennsylvania is one of the net exporters of energy in PJM. It's, I think, the biggest net exporter of energy in PJM. It's a huge industry for us. And this is a tax credit that would have benefited energy companies, right? So that coupled with the increasing demand, especially with this sort of flurry of data center news that's been coming into Pennsylvania, sort of begged the question, what will the impact be on the energy industry? And essentially after talking to, you know, smaller commercial scale solar renewable energy companies, as well as utility scale energy companies, they were saying, you know, it's not ideal. It means less money for us. But there is such a demand of energy that we're probably still going to be able to build new projects. This lack of federal funds might just trickle down into, you know, higher consumer energy prices.
Right. And in your article, you cite one report that projects an annual increase of $130 per Pennsylvania household by 2030. So they actually put a clear number on what that increase may be. So let's just get into more details on how this tax credit rollback could translate into a projected $130 increase.
Yeah, so essentially as part of the sort of Biden environmental policy, they passed a bunch of tax credits for various kinds of clean energy. So that's solar, wind. There's other kinds of tax credits for hydrogen, which is a new kind of energy. But one of these tax credits, a few of these tax credits specifically focus on the cost it takes to build out clean energy. So that can be like solar farms, it can be wind turbines. And basically, the developers who build these projects would be able to claim part of their funds back once they're built. That tax credit was originally supposed to last until, I believe, the 2030s, but as a part of the federal reconciliation bill that just passed in July, it's now being shortened to, at the longest point, like the end of next year, I believe.
So how are developers navigating the shortened deadlines? You know, projects got to be starting construction by 2026 or start operation by 2027 to still qualify for credits?
Yeah, pretty much. So developers are saying that they're not changing anything about their projects right now, right? Like they think they still have enough time to get their current projects in the ground so they can still claim this tax credit. But that it might impact future projects in that, you know, when you get money back from a federal tax credit, that's less money that you have to find from investors, from like other revenue sources, right? So increased prices for developers essentially can trickle down to increase prices for consumers, because these are like a lot, oftentimes utility scale projects, right? So they're going to be feeding back into the grid, which, you know, that's how power gets supplied to everyday Pennsylvanians.
Is there any difference on how the rollback will impact, say, large scale developers versus, you know, small residential solar installers?
Yeah, so there's a separate tax credit for residential solar installation, and that actually expires sooner. So the residential tax credit, I believe, expires at the end of this year. And so there's a shorter window for residential, like, folks who want to put solar panels on their houses to claim that tax credit. The utility scale ones, or the non-residential ones, the commercial ones, that lasts a little bit longer. And I will say from the utility companies I've talked to, like, they're saying that there's such a demand for energy, right, with all the data center booms and just growing, you know, electrification, that they're not concerned about not being able to build the project, right? They're more just saying that, you know, the less money we get from the federal government for these projects that we don't have to pay back, the more money it is on us, which will translate possibly to like higher costs for consumers, right? It's just all about the trickle down effect.
Okay, what can be done at the state or local level to balance these federal tax credit rollbacks?
Yeah, I mean, the state does have tax credits for various energy industries. I think that a lot of the complaints on the state level is about connecting to the PJM grid. So we're one of like 13 states that are a part of this grid. And it's sort of like simple supply and demand rules, right? The more energy that there is, the less it costs. So a lot of the state sort of the state's role in it is trying to create legislations or economic incentives that makes it easier for energy companies to come online and connect to the grid. But the grid is like, it's an interstate agency, so, or the company, so it is a federally regulated company. But by and large, the state's just trying to encourage sort of all of the above energy is the go-to line.
Does the idea, I know I've heard about data centers, you know, possibly being sited in Pennsylvania and, you know, continually growing. Does the growth of data centers factor into energy demand projections?
Yeah, by and large. I mean, PJM has said this, independent researchers have said this, that the growth of data centers is going to significantly contribute to energy demand over the next decade or so. I think I read one study that was saying that with this amount of data center growth, it was going to be equivalent to a city roughly the size of Philadelphia, the increase in energy demand. There definitely is awareness that there's an increased demand, and like state lawmakers have been talking about that as sort of context for trying to encourage energy growth in the state.
We're talking with Kate Wong Pu of Spotlight PA, whose most recent article is What Trump's Solar Crackdown Could Mean for Pennsylvania Energy Bills. And Kate, we're doing great, just digging deep into all the different factors that are impacting this and the different ways that this could go. Are there historical examples in Pennsylvania or elsewhere where, you know, similar tax credit rollbacks, you know, were temporary or were reinstated later?
Yeah, so the tax credits themselves, they're called an investment tax credit and a production tax credit. They've come and gone in the past, right? So, like, it's not a new concept to try to lower costs for energy developers. And a lot of, like, some of the solar energy folks that I was talking to were saying, you know, this is not new. We've been in the game for a little while now, and the tax credits have gone, they've come, and overall the demand for energy is growing, so, you know, it'll be fine. It's just sort of an added impact of the reconciliation bill.
And now what about clean energy developers? Are they going to have to shift to alternative models to keep their projects viable?
Yeah, that what they're saying is that they will have to look for increased financing options. So because the federal tax credit, right, like that's money that they wouldn't have had to pay back to an investor. There's a dearth. So it's a matter of either increasing prices to get more money back or finding other investors. Either way, it's not free, right? So that is sort of the impact that will probably be the most relevant for consumers. But that is something that's sort of 5 or 6 years down the line, because it takes a while for these plants to be developed, and then actually breaking ground is, you know, a sort of delayed process. So the impacts won't be seen immediately.
And what about, you know, advocacy groups, people on the ground looking out, whether they're looking out for consumers or they're looking out for the environment? How are advocates on the ground responding to these changes?
Yeah, I mean, I would say they're not fans, right? Like, a lot of environmental advocates that I've talked to have basically said, you know, the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, which was large parts of it were rolled back with the reconciliation bill, had a lot of funding for clean energy, for energy efficiency that could have been used for, you know, homeowners or folks who rent. And that's funding that, you know, it's not only efficient, it's also better for the environment. And a lot of those programs are going to be abridged, right? They would have lasted into 2030, into the 2030s, and now they're ending within a handful of years. So both consumer advocates and environmental advocates aren't thrilled that those programs are being shortened. And it's hard to sort of compete with the amount of federal funding available, right? Like the state government isn't going to be able to create a program as far-reaching or as with as much funding as the federal government could.
And meantime, you know, all signs point to, you know, demand continuing to be there, demand continuing to climb, yet, you know, investment in renewable sources for energy starts slowing down. What might be coming in the near future if demand continues to rise while investment in renewables is slowing down?
Yeah, I mean, I think the overarching concern is that energy prices will increase. Last year, there was a huge spike in the capacity auction that PJM had, which basically sort of outlined how much energy will need to be provided in the next, in like 2 years following that auction. And it really shot up. It was sort of unexpected how much it would go up. This year, it didn't go up as much, but it still went up. And so if that capacity auction price goes up, that sort of also trickles down to consumers, right, where energy costs could go up. So the overarching concern, and not just reserved to renewables, but renewables are like sort of the project that is most in line to get connected to the grid. The concern is just that there won't be enough energy with the amount of demand that's going to be coming in.
Right. Well, Kate, I want to thank you for going over all this. Is there anything that we didn't get to about the story that you'd like folks to know?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the reconciliation bill had a lot of impact, not energy related, on Medicaid funding and food stamps. But this is one aspect that, you know, we thought it was interesting to focus on as well.
All right. Well, the article is up now at spotlightpa.org. And we've been talking to Kate Wongpu of Spotlight PA. Kate, thank you so much for talking to us.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we learn all about Community Wellness Day happening this Saturday in Monticello. Stay with us.
The lady that's calling me a fascist is not living in that bubble. She is very invested in her beliefs and where she thinks the country's going. She showed up and she's spicy. Like, that's the town square. That's politics.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on The Daily from The New York Times.
Hey there, I'm Jason Dole, reminding you again, we've lost our federal funding and we need donations from our listeners. And that includes donations from listeners' music collections. Radio Catskill holds 3 music sales a year, selling records, CDs, stereo equipment, and all of that musical goodness is donated by listeners like you. Our next music sale is Saturday, August 30th, so if you have music that you don't need anymore, now is a great time to give it. If you've been wanting to stand up to this unprecedented attack on public radio and free speech itself, well, this is a great way to do it. People donate their music collections to us. We sell them to the next generation of music fans, and that keeps the station on air. It comes from the community and goes back to the community so that Radio Catskill can serve everyone in the community. Be a part of it. Donate your records and musical items to us. Call the station or email feedback@wjffradio.org. That's feedback@wjffradio.org. Thank you.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It's a local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Community Wellness Day is happening this Saturday, 10 to 2 in De Hoyas Park in Monticello. Co-sponsored by the Sullivan County Department of Public Health and Action Towards Independence, this free family event is featuring health screenings, workshops, crafts, DIY stations, a teddy bear clinic, a magic show, and more. To find out about it, Radio Catskills' Patricio Rubio spoke to Jill Hubert-Simon, Deputy Public Health Director for Sullivan County.
So we're hoping for a really fun day for families, kids of all ages, as we like to say, to come out and to enjoy a nice day. DeBoyes is a beautiful park. We have, 20 plus, I'm not sure the exact number, but we have more than 20 of our community vendors who are coming to the event. So people can learn some stuff about the things that our community community partners offer. But more importantly, we want people to have a fun day, to learn something about health, and just to spend some family time together and get to have a fun day in the park.
Right. Now, I understand that there are going to be health screenings being offered. Can you tell us what health screenings are being offered? I'm assuming like blood pressure, things like that?
Yeah, the standard one. So blood pressure is the big one. We had some more lined up. Unfortunately, one of our community partners had to cancel. But blood pressures. I don't want to quote exactly on what's going to be there because we're not 100% sure. But, we're definitely going to have some of our community partners there, and we'll at least do blood pressures and some general health information.
Right. Well, I'd have to ask, is the teddy bear clinic still happening?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So we're really excited about the teddy bear clinic. Some of the residents from Toro Health will be there and help run that. It's really just a good opportunity for kids to learn about healthcare and what maybe will happen to that, when they go to the doctor, what happens when they get a vaccine. They can, use their teddy bears for that and kind of go through that in a very non-threatening way. So the teddy bear clinic's really, I'm very excited about that. I think that's a really good opportunity for kids to interact with some healthcare professionals and to kind of, maybe get rid of some of that fear surrounding going to the doctor or having some medical procedures done.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And thinking about doctors, it's on my mind now because we're going back to school soon. And a lot of times we get the physicals right before school.
Physicals and, kids, they have to have vaccines to go to school. So sometimes there is just some, hesitancy about that. Kids, don't like needles or think it's going to hurt or don't understand the process. So this teddy bear clinic is a really good opportunity to kind of go through some of that. And again, maybe, destigmatize some of the things that kids think happen at the doctors.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, let's talk about sort of the long-term goals. We have risen in the rankings for Sullivan County for public health, from the Robert Wood Johnson's standings. But how do events like this, community health events like this in Monticello, sort of support the long-term wellness of Sullivan County as a whole?
I think the big thing it does is it can connect people to some of the services that are being offered. A lot of times people may not know all of the services that a lot of our community partners offer. So by having our community partners at these events and an opportunity where you can take the time and talk and ask questions and get some information and, just getting more information, being educated, knowing what's going on, really goes a long way to improving the health. Because if you can access services that you need, we typically tend to be healthier.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So,
and of course, being outside and having fun, those are all good for our health too. So,
yes, definitely. And I see, just because I have a child, so I see that you're also going to have other things for children besides the teddy bear clinic.
Yes, so we have a magic show, which we're really excited about, and we have a lot of different arts and crafts activities. We've asked our vendors to bring either an arts and crafts activity or something interactive that would be something that kids can do so they can be involved, they can have fun, they can have some stuff to take home while, mom, dad, guardian get some information for services.
Yeah. Now, this is not the first time that Public Health has partnered with Action Towards Independence. Do you want to talk a little bit about that partnership?
Sure. So we have partnered for the past 2 years with Action Toward Independence and what was Health Fest. So we've done 2 years of those, both of them at Hanafee Park in Liberty. The goal has always been to move it around to different areas of the community to reach different parts of our population. Not everybody can get to Liberty, so we're taking it to Monticello to help people in that community as well. ATI is an amazing partner. They help, you know, they help organize, they help fund some of it and support it financially. And they're a partner that we work with a lot on a regular basis. So very excited and happy to be able to continue this partnership and continue these community wellness days, health fest, opportunities for the community to come out and learn some more about things that we do.
So if someone's listening to this who's never been to a health fair or a community wellness day, what's one reason you'd like to tell them and to encourage them to come out this Saturday?
Well, come out this Saturday because you don't know what you're going to learn. You don't know what you're going to see. Your neighbors are all going to be there. So maybe you'll, get to meet some new people. You'll see some of your neighbors. And just have fun and have a day out of the house and give the kids something to do. And again, it's kids of all ages. So, if you don't have young kids, please feel free to come. The Teddy Bear Clinic is open to everybody, as well as all of our other vendors. So it's a really good opportunity, to learn a lot about the services, but it's also going to be a beautiful day to be in the park, and just, you know, have a good day outside of the house.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So that's happening this Saturday, August 23rd from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Like I said, everyone's welcome to the Hoyas Park in Monticello for Community Wellness Day. It's co-sponsored by Sullivan County Department of Public Health and Action Towards Independent. And we were talking to the Deputy Public Health Director for Sullivan County, Jill Hubert-Simon. Jill, thank you so much for talking to me. Is there anything else that I have left out that you want to talk about?
I don't think so. I think, you know, I just would really encourage people to come check it out. It's, you know, you can come for 5 minutes. You can come for 4 hours. You can, you know, just come check it out. Have some fun. Bring the family. And stop by Public Health Tent and say hello to all of us because we really are looking forward to meeting new members of our community.
Awesome. Again, thank you so much, Jill, for this. Like I said, this Saturday, August 23rd, is a Community Wellness Day in Monticello. Again, Jill, thank you so much for talking to us. I do really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to share the information.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio. Well, that's it for the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. I'll be back here with you again tomorrow. We'll have more local edition. And I'm reminding you, as always, of, tonight, two reasons you should go to WJFFradio.org. The first is because we need your support now more than ever. If you haven't given to Radio Catskill in a long time, now's the time to give because, we lost our federal funding, you may have heard, in the past month. And we're trying to make up that shortfall while we continue to grow the station, grow our news teams, and increase the amount and quality of local news coverage that we're able to bring to you. And we won't be able to continue to grow under these new financial restrictions without the local community stepping up and everybody doing what they can. So that's the first reason you should go to WJFFradio.org. And to spread the word to other folks, they should do the same. You can always make a donation at WJFFradio.org. You can also see all the podcasts that we have. You know, podcasts include our local talk shows. They're available as podcasts there, so you can sign up to make sure you don't miss any edition of The Local Edition or Radio Catskill or Catskill Character or Farm and Country, all the great programs we have for you here. But also we have some special podcasts and a special one that we started just heading into this past weekend. The Woodstock Anniversary Weekend was our brand new Woodstock-focused podcast called Woodstock Lost and Found. So if you missed any of the special programming we produced all week last week for the Woodstock anniversary, it's all up there at WJFFradio.org. Just look at podcasts and look for Woodstock Lost and Found. Coming up at 7, we've got Laura Flanders and Friends along with Sabrina Artell's Trailer Talk. But before that, we've got more news from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Support comes from the Wayne County Farmers Market, selling local produce, baked goods, and so much more. Saturdays, 9:30 to 12:30, in front of Dave's Super Duper Supermarket, 200 Willow Avenue, Honesdale. More information on Facebook and PoconoMountains.com/Honesdale/events. And from the Cooperage Project, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, the rise and fall of Real Women Have Curves, the musical, and what it tells us about Latinidad on Broadway.
It was crazy to live our dreams while portraying nightmares. It was so hard to know that literally we had the scene when the raids are afuera.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF, Jeffersonville. Radio Catskill.